Today on Renewing Your Mind.
If you seek to please men rather than God, it might get you into the most honored seat in the house until he comes.
Pride is a dangerous character trait. Pride attempts to put us on the throne and take God off. The opposite of pride, of course, is humility. What is true humility? C.S. Lewis defined it as not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. Today on the weekend edition of Renewing Your Mind, Dr. R.C. Sproul takes us into Luke chapter 14 and the opening verses of that chapter to show us the way of humility. Here's Dr. Sproul now from the pulpit of St. Andrew's Chapel in Sanford, Florida, where he serves as co-pastor.
What we've heard this morning is the third episode given to us in the book of Luke of encounters that Jesus had with the Pharisees with respect to the issue of healing people on the Sabbath day. And it seems like there's no end to this dispute in the New Testament as the Pharisees pounced upon this one activity of Jesus as, in their view, the most sacrilegious and blasphemous thing that he did during his earthly ministry. Remember, these are Pharisees. They were so named because in the intertestamental period, they saw the moral decline of their own nation. People moving away from a desire to obey the law of God. And so they called themselves the set apart ones because they were uniquely devoted to keeping every law that came from God in the Old Testament. And some of them were convinced that if they for one day kept the law perfectly, that that would induce God to send the long-awaited Messiah. And here's the irony. That Messiah is standing before them. And these men who had dedicated themselves to the pursuit of righteousness had degenerated into a group of hypocrites. They were involved in a parade and in a charade. Their joy was to parade their righteousness and their holiness, not before God, but before the eyes of men. What they lusted for was the applause of human beings. And so they paraded their righteousness before the eyes of the people. But as I said, their parade was a charade. It was an exercise in hypocrisy. It was a pretense, as their righteousness was not genuine. And nothing exposes the counterfeit like the genuine. And when Christ came in their midst, they couldn't stand him. And their overwhelming desire was to get rid of him, if necessary, by execution. And here it happens again, where they invite him to dinner, this time again on the Sabbath. And Jesus comes, knowing full well that it's a trap. They haven't invited him out of kindness or friendliness, or in a sense to honor him, but rather to catch him in another violation of the Sabbath. We're told that they watched him closely. Every eye was on him. What's he going to say? What's he going to do? And Luke tells us that there was a certain man who was already there who had dropsy. Our best guess is that this man who suffered from acute edema, possibly manifesting a serious illness involving the heart or the kidneys or the liver, was a plant. The Pharisees went out and found somebody that they could put in the midst of this feast to see if Jesus would do it again, like he had done on at least two other occasions on the Sabbath day. And so before Jesus did anything, he asked his host a question, speaking to those who were assembled there, including the scribes and the Pharisees, saying, "Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath?" He put his petition before the court before he acted and asked them to give a judgment. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath day? Well, in fact, it was, according to Jewish law. There were exceptions to the prohibition against work. Those exceptions involved emergency situations when human beings or animals were in severe distress. Now, there was one sect among the Jews, the Essenes, who were even more narrow and scrupulous than the run-of-the-mill Pharisees. We know from the Dead Sea Scroll from Qumran that the Essenes had a prohibition that you couldn't assist one of your animals, your livestock, in giving birth to their young if it was the Sabbath day. And if it was the Sabbath day and one of your animals gave birth to its young and the newborn animal fell into a pit, you couldn't rescue it on the Sabbath day. But that narrow view was not the traditional view of the Pharisees, and Jesus knew that. And so he asked the question, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? And what did they say? Some said yes. Some said no. Yes, no, maybe, no. They said nothing. The room was silent. They didn't know what to say to Jesus. So they kept their mouth shut. And so he took the man and healed him and let him go. And then he again directed his attention to the Pharisees and said, which of you having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into a pit will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day? This is the same argument that he used on a previous occasion. And again, they couldn't answer him regarding these things. They haven't even started eating yet. And so Jesus punctuates his action by giving a parable. Let's look carefully at this parable. He told a parable to those who were invited when he noted how they chose the best places, saying to them, when you're invited to anyone for a wedding feast, don't sit down at the best place, lest someone more honorable than you be invited. And he who invited you and him come and say to you, give place to this man. And then you begin with shame to go to the lowest place. You can see it. The wedding feast was a memorable time. There were places set for those who came and who were holding high offices. And it was similar to this very feast that the Pharisees had invited Jesus, where he healed the man. On a normal dinner party like that, the host would have three U-shaped couches, and people would recline to eat their meal. And the tables were established with priorities. Table number one was for the highest honored guest. Table number two for the next group. Table number three for the group after that. And the person who was in the highest honor sat at the bottom of the U. And then those at his left and at his right were also in this pecking order of honor. Now, there weren't any reserve signs or name signs placed at each table. It was open seating, as it were. But everybody was supposed to know their place. And when the person who was the host, who sat at the highest place, sat down, he expected that the two seats beside him would be occupied by the most highly honored guests. But Jesus was watching what was going on here, and there was this mad scramble among the invited guests to try and sit next to the host or get closer to the host. Nobody wanted to sit in seat number 9. That was for the lowly person among the guests. Well, one of the things that I was struck by at the symphony recording this past week was that there were 46 strings. I don't know how many of them were violins, but at least 25, maybe 30. And I got to meet the concertmaster, who was the number one chair violinist, and he was playing a $250,000 violin. That's a good violin, by the way. But I watched him and listened to him. His music was impeccable. And as concert master, he worked along with the conductor to hear notes that nobody else in the room heard that were not exactly what they were supposed to be. And I talked to him at one of the breaks, and I said, how does that person feel who's the violinist in seat 25? What's it feel like to be relegated to such a lowly place in the orchestra? And he smiled and he said, who's ever in that seat is thrilled to be there, to be able to be in this orchestra at all. And then I thought about this parable, and I thought, what would happen on one day when it's time to record that the man who was assigned seat 25 came and sat down in the number one chair? How long do you think he'd stay there until the concertmaster would come in and say, excuse me, you're in the wrong chair? And you see the man then sheepishly slink off, going back to the back of the room, sitting in seat 25. Jesus says, don't be foolish. Don't be hustling and rushing and pushing to find yourself in the most honored position. Because when the host comes, you will be ashamed when you are escorted to the back of the room. Rather, he says, when you come in, sit in the most lowly place. And then the host will come to you and say, my friend, don't demean yourself like this. I have a higher place for you. Come on forward. I have a place for you at seat number 4. And then before the watching group, you will receive honor and glory. And then Jesus gave the maxim that those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. And then he goes on with the parable. He said, oh, look, if you're going to give a feast, don't be like everybody else where you only invite the rich and the famous or your friends or your business associates, expecting that as a consequence of your generous feast that you give, you'll be repaid and honored by those who are in attendance because they will reciprocate in like manner. But rather, instead, invite the poor, the maimed, the shunned, the lowly, the amorets, the people of the earth. Bring them, those who cannot repay you. And your repayment will be great in heaven. Because what those people will not be able to do for you, my Father will do for you. Now, what's this all about? What this is about is something basic to our humanity, an ungodly ambition and quest for recognition and honor and glory in this world. And Jesus is saying your gaze is in the wrong place. Your gaze is fixed on this terrestrial plane. You need to lift up your eyes unto heaven. The reformers had an adage that said we're to live our lives coram Deo, before the face of God. That everything we do should be done before God, under His authority, and to His glory. Not bound to this world and to the ambitions that define our earthly estate. I'd like to move briefly to another passage that was written by the Apostle Paul, a passage that has had a deep impact on my life, working as a professional theologian for most of my life. I've had my share of theological debates and controversies. But several years ago, I was involved in one of the most painful theological controversies of my life, where there was an issue at stake that was so weighty and so severe that I felt constrained to stand in opposition to some of my closest friends and comrades in the faith. And I have to confess to you, that was one of the most painful experiences of my life. But the issue was about the gospel, an issue over which we can't possibly compromise for the sake of relationships. Well, the Bible teaches us as much as possible to live at peace with all men. We are not to be quarrelsome. We're not to be contentious. We're not supposed to be fighting over the falling of a leaf. But at the same time, there are times when a line has to be drawn where you simply cannot tolerate the intolerable. That's what happened in the 16th century. That's what happened at the Diet of Worms when Luther said, "Revoco." You want me to say, "Revoco, I recant"? I can't do that. If a floodgate of iniquity is opened, so be it. But I have to tell you, I was in agony over this particular issue, and I went into this church, and I was by myself. I had my Bible. And I opened it up to Galatians chapter 1, beginning at verse 6. Where the Apostle Paul, writing to the Galatians, wrote these words: "I marvel that you're turning away so soon from him who called you in the grace of Christ to a different gospel." Paul's expressing apostolic astonishment that some of these Christians who embraced that gospel by which they were redeemed had moved away from it so quickly to what he said was a different gospel. But then he corrects himself, as it were, and he says, which is not another. As the apostle understood, there was only one gospel. There are not two gospels. And yet there's some who trouble you and want you to pervert the gospel of Christ. And then he said this: "But even we, or an angel from heaven, preach any other gospel to you than what we have preached to you, let him be accursed." The Greek, anathema. The literal translation, "Let him be anathema." Cursed of God. Anyone who preaches any perversion of the gospel, even if it's an angel from heaven, let him be accursed. If an angel walks in the door and tells you a different gospel from what I've preached to you, you're to take him by the seat of his celestial pants and kick him out of the church under the anathema of God. So we said before, let me say it again. If anyone preaches any other gospel to you than what you have received, let him be accursed. Now, I have to tell you that before I went into the church that day, I had read that passage 100 times. And I knew that the Apostle Paul had told us that we're not to negotiate or compromise or exchange the gospel in any way whatsoever. And that if any would seek to pervert that gospel, they were under the judgment of God. I knew that. I knew what happened in the 16th century at the Council of Trent. where the Protestant doctrine and understanding of justification by faith alone was subjected to the denunciation of Rome with a series of canons at the sixth session of the Council of Trent, where it says, if anyone says blah, 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 let him be anathema. And that the Reformed doctrine of justification had been cursed by Rome in the 16th century. And I knew that the Roman understanding of the gospel and the Reformed understanding of the gospel were two different ones. They couldn't both be right. One's gospel, the other one isn't. And I knew what the pressure would be to soften that difference and negotiate that article upon which the church stands or falls. And so I kept coming back to Galatians. If anyone, even an angel from heaven, even if it's your best friend, even if it's your co-laborer, preaches a different gospel, you can't negotiate that. No matter what. But you know, all those times that I read that passage in that conjunction with that, I stopped at the end of verse 9 and didn't go on to verse 10. But that day in that church, I read verse 10. For do I now persuade men or God? That's the option. Am I trying to persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I still please men, I would not be the bondservant of Christ. Now, Paul's not saying that we should be as displeasing to human beings as we possibly can. Nor was Jesus saying that it's always wrong to have a dinner party where you just bring your friends in. He doesn't say that. But Jesus was talking about the sin of being a man pleaser, where there are those moments in our life that every Christian has to face from time to time, where you're faced with that dilemma. Do I please these people or do I please God? The Bible is a history of what happens to people who've made that choice and who've decided to please God rather than men. And it's a bloody history. It's not a pleasant thing to lose friends. It's not a pleasant thing to have your reputation tarnished because you wouldn't play ball. But with respect to the gospel, it's never, ever, ever a game. It's a commitment where eternity hangs in the balance. And it's better to lose 1,000 friends. It's better to lose 1,000 relatives than to lose the gospel. Because if you seek to please men rather than God, it might get you into the most honored seat in the house until he comes and said, please move. Go to the back of the house. For those who have kept the faith, who have honored me, and have sought more than anything else to please me, rather than the applause of this world, come up here and sit in my Father's house. Who do you want to please? The world or the Lord of the world?
This is Renewing Your Mind, the listener-supported radio outreach of Ligonier Ministries. Dr. R.C. Sproul preached that sermon at St. Andrew's Chapel, where he serves as co-pastor. And you can listen to it again on our website. It's at renewingyourmind.org. And we have a resource that we'd like to let you know about today. If you call us with a gift of any amount, we will send you a copy of Dr. Sproul's hardcover expositional commentary on 1 and 2 Peter. In it, Dr. Sproul provides an overview of the themes found in both of Peter's letters. It's great for individual study or to help guide your family through a better understanding of Scripture. So place your order of Dr. Sproul's hardcover expositional commentary on 1 and 2 Peter when you call us at 800-435-4343 or when you go to our web address at renewingyourmind.org. We so appreciate your financial gifts to Ligonier Ministries. They help us proclaim, teach, and defend the holiness of God in all its fullness to as many people as possible. Well, certainly glad you joined us for today's message, and I hope you'll join us at the same time again next weekend as Dr. Sproul delivers a sermon on God's great feast for God's people. That's next weekend right here on Renewing Your Mind.